This is Dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
This is Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist Mae Brussel. And I'm Phil Kogan. Glad you could join us for this show. I'm glad you could be here again, Mae, for the 923,000th broadcast. Seems like a lot of shows.
Somebody thought you were being sarcastic. They asked me if you were antagonist. You know, they listened to the show. They said, is he putting you on? I said, I don't think so. A sense of humor. Does it seem like the 9,000th?
Bad sense of humor.
Okay. You should say the first show. Each week is a new one.
This is the first show in a continuing series.
That's right. Each one is a new series, each new show. So it's the first show of the continuing series. Why don't you explain what the series is?
Want me to explain?
Yeah, you explain it this time.
Oh, wow.
I want to see if you understand it.
What am I doing here? This is a program dealing with political assassinations and the evidence and lack of evidence concerning those assassinations, the people involved in the assassinations, the people who are linked through evidence to the assassinations that aren't linked through evidence in courts of law, and a general relationship between the assassinations and what's happening on a day-to-day basis in the news.
Very good.
Can I get an A?
You get an A. Okay, and we'll take the news this week just briefly because we have a lot of material to cover. There was an article in the San Jose Mercury from Gerald Ford, and I like to relate this to the political assassinations. Gerald Ford, for those of you who do not remember, was a member of the Warren Commission who was supposed to investigate the John Kennedy assassination. He's a leader of the GOP in the House, and he's attacking Jack Anderson and Senator Ed Kennedy for embarrassing Mr. Clinus and Mitchell and President Nixon about the Leta Baird letter. And he is accusing them of a political conspiracy that they're ganging up against the Republicans. There's a sentence I want to read to you that is a typical Gerald Ford sentence, and he should be the one to know what it is. In his attack on Anderson, Ford said that the columnist, in quotes, had used the universally discredited technique of multiple hearsay to substantiate his charges, a gimmick which involves the presentation of evidence three or four times removed from the source. It is virtually impossible to verify the accuracy or the veracity of this kind of evidence, and Mr. Anderson knows it, end quotes. Mr. Ford knows it, too, because that's what the Warren Report was. It involved three or four times removed people, and they're all hearsay, and I've spent 8 years cross-filing the origin of the hearsay. He speaks about multiple hearsay and discredited techniques. This is the expert of them all, and he should know. So I'd like that sentence because it defines the Warren Report. Last week, we had a guest here, Richard Sprague, on the peninsula. He came to talk to the computer department of the Navy Postgraduate School. Mr. Sprague met over at Monterey Peninsula College last Saturday evening. We had a wonderful crowd. And I was telling you about it, Phil. It was too bad you couldn't be here. There are over 200 young people, and it really made me feel good that the young people, they are listening and they're understanding. They were very intelligent. The meeting lasted until about 1:30 in the morning, full of questions and curiosity and growing awareness. And I really felt good that people are understanding the nature of the political assassinations. And we have one problem in communication to get to these people. You showed such interest and enthusiasm in attending this meeting that
you had a lot of people there.
We had a lot of people, and it was a very intelligent, marvelous questions, intelligent crowd, and the nucleus of something that could be very strong and good. And what I want people to do, I have the address or phone number of various persons who have written to me since the show's been on for 8 months. And some of those, we just notified them by word of mouth or called them or sent out postcards if they lived up in Watsonville or Castroville or up at Cabrillo College or Santa Cruz. But I want to give the address of the station here and my home address. And if you enjoyed that program, if you want to meet other researchers who are in town, we don't have time between radio shows to get together. If they give me their phone number address, we can get together. Because next week I'm having another visitor here, Bob Cutler from Manchester, Massachusetts. He's a professor of architecture and engineering at the University of Massachusetts, and it's a spring break now, and he's coming out to be with his in-laws and family on the West Coast, and he's making a special two-day trip to Carmel to go over research with me. And Bob Cutler did the architectural drawings for computer automation in May 1970, in June, May 1971, and in June, the two Mays, 1970 and 1971, of the Dealey Plaza. And you can buy copies of his architectural drawings locating where the assassin stood and what happened at Dealey Plaza if you want them. He sells those drawings. But he's coming out here. He's done a book he's just completed with Joe Justine, who lives in Europe, on the Chappaquiddick Affair, how the CIA framed Ted Kennedy. And he has done the architectural work on the car, where it was, and the drawings, and the speed of the water pressure against the door, the impossibility for him to have been in the car to have opened the door, and so forth. So next week, I don't think we'll talk about the grassy knoll. We did a little bit on that with Richard Sprague last week. I think we'll talk about Ted Kennedy and the Chappaquiddick Affair, because I've never done that for any of the shows. But if you people want to meet Mr. Cutler, it's hard on such a short notice. We're on the air on Saturday, and he'll be here Tuesday. But other people will be coming to Peninsula. Bill Turner's coming down from San Francisco. He worked with the FBI and quit. Had fights with Hoover, and he's written three books, two on the right wing, one on the police establishment, one on the FBI. So if there's a short time between the time we're on the air and when I can reach you people, if you send us cards with your address or phone number, I have volunteers and friends who listen to the show that can notify you. So write KLRB, Box 3904, Carmel, California. And if you want a mailing list, send a letter and maybe put in five stamps for five letters, or mimeograph sheets where I can send you titles of books from time to time if there's a large enough group that are really interested. But if you give me your address and it's out of town, enclose some stamps so we can send off letters to you in a hurry, you know, because that's the best way they get to you in one day. And or you can send them to my home, Route 2, Box 3050, Carmel, California. 93921. Give your name, and if you live out of town, send an envelope with a few stamps. And if you're interested in meeting these people, I can get a room over at the college in the evening, and we can get together on short notice in case we don't have time between the air program. Or if even announcing on the air, there's some people that may miss one week. So thank you all for showing up. It was really a great group, and everyone who was there, I'm sure, enjoyed it. If we had more time, there would have been a lot more.
Yeah, if you miss the addresses or you can't write them down, if you just write KLRB Carmel, it will get to May. Just write Dialogue Assassination, KLRB Carmel. Or May's address is Route 2, Box 3050, also in Carmel, California.
And if you have a local, send your phone number if you want to be notified when these various people come to town. Or if you're out of town, send an envelope. Now, the week before, we were in such a hurry, I mentioned a book called Dallas Conspiracy, and we forgot to give the address. We went off the air. The author is Nord Davis, Jr., Box 48, Hollis, New Hampshire. It's 50 cents. It's a good book. It's a book about the bullet trajectory, the famous bullet 399 that passes through President Kennedy and John Connally. It's only 50 cents. Mr. Nord Davis, Jr. is a member of the John Birch Society. He is looking for a communist bullet. But whether it's a communist bullet or CIA bullet, he doubts whether it could make that course, and he doubts all the physical evidence of the murder. His conclusion is, write to J. Edgar Hoover, it's a communist. But you can read the book and sift out what you want. If Mr. Hoover thought it was a communist, he'd still be looking for them. The fact that he closed the case tells you either he's protecting the communists, so they shouldn't have so much trust in him, or that he's wrong on the assumption. But the physical evidence is not political. In these particular assassinations, I always say that 10 bullets in the ambassador are not Republican or Democratic bullets, and they don't belong to Sirhan, all of them. It's not a political matter. It's a matter of physical evidence and somebody telling a lie. One other book, Nocturnal Vaudeville. Can you write it down in the time we're on the air? By Stephen Schneck, S-C-H-N-E-C-K. It's a novel about a man who watches television, the evening news, and he is television, and he talks about John and Bobby and Martin and Manson, Oswald, Dallas, assassinations, and Jack Ruby, and he begins, it's a radio television show, hello out there, hello, hello, all of you who dote on false fruits. and people stay up at night and watch the television. And he says, the show is us. It's a reflection of us. And the late show, it's the show, it's USA, that's what it is. And it begins with the announcer, what a show we have lined up for you tonight. All the previewing characteristics of the conspiracy, it's all here in your United States of Mystery. And he goes into all the individual single parts, he says, in a number of parts, which, when added up, will total a killer, actually a number of killers, in fact, a network of killers and long-distance murderers. And he goes into how people are lulled into the evening news and watching the Sharon Tate massacre and all the, he says, the sum of the parts, when divided by the number of killers and the conspirators, reveals a fraction of the number of available targets, winking and twinkling like stars far away. And this is like Hitler. He started with one and then with another. And the number of killers and conspirators is just a fraction of the many they can get to if they succeed. And he goes on to say, it's nearer than you think, that for us at Nocturnal Vaudeville. And then he has a sentence in there I quoted to read you. I copied down because it's the way I feel about the political assassinations. And I think it's important for you to know this. And he talks about Nocturnal Vaudeville, and he says, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that does not touch or make contact with us in some way at some point and with everything else. And all objects and thoughts and people's dreams and desires and deeds and everything relating to everything else, everything in relation to everything else, and above all, every single thing is unique and everything is interchangeable. And I like that quotation because people think that the political assassination of John Kennedy, President Kennedy, or Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, is something that doesn't affect us. You know what I mean, Phil? It does come down into the daily news and the things that affect our foreign policy and the way the country is going. The desperation this week, the Black Caucus deciding we can't work with either political party. That news today is a fact because of the continuous murder of black people and not recognizing their needs, and by the political assassinations and the continuing of the legal policies of wiping out the black leaders in every walk of life, you force another course, which becomes absolutely necessary. The system doesn't work when you keep murdering off these leaders and they can't work within the system. They realize that the people in power now, Democrat or Republican, will never represent their particular needs. So I think this kind of feeling to be separated from the mainstream of America is realistic in lieu of the continuous murdering of black people that I have studied and analyzed. The system is not going to allow them to survive, just like the single black woman on the jury was removed in the Angela Davis case on some feeble excuse of her husband, you know, in a bar arrest. The decision is made of what to do with Angela Davis, and they're not going to give her this chance if they can help it.
Well, if people are listening to Dialogue Assassination over the weeks and they follow up on some of the research, they read some of the books, and they listen carefully and maybe take a few notes, and they come to the conclusion that much of what you say is true, that it's all available there, and it just took you to point it out and tie it together, what do they do if they find themselves agreeing with you?
Well, if they find themselves agreeing with me, one of the things they do is that, first of all, this is an election year. Even in a non-election year, you can use this policy. Everybody that comes through this peninsula campaigning, or everybody at a national level that may catch their interest, like Shirley Chisholm or McGovern or anybody that they think that they want for president, or the local level, anyone writes with you, say, what would you do if you were sent to Sacramento or Washington to open up the truth sale? In Sacramento, it's a California problem, the Bobby Kennedy assassination, the Manson, framing Manson and Frazier. You said each one of them, what would you do about opening up the evidence that a conspiracy exists? And if they say, I won't touch it, like I asked McCloskey when he was here, he says, I accept the Warren Report. I just say, well, thank you very much, and I go another way. You don't have to accept these people as your leaders. If they refuse to open up the National Archives and answer the rights to freedom, the access to information, forget about them. I feel that strongly about it. And let them know that you don't have to accept the locking up of these things, that if they want them locked up, you won't give them their support. You can be a registered voter, but you just won't give them support of any kind. I understand that Wayne Morris was here speaking at Hartnell. I didn't hear him, but somebody heard him, and he talked about opening the National Archives and the conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. Of course, he's not running for office now, but he was pretty far out when he did run for office. But let people know. You see, they are, I use expression, and somebody passed on to me, they are the directors, and they tell you what to do, and you're the robot, and you're supposed to take orders. And they don't want you to think you have a mind of your own. So if you simply speak up and say, I know what happened, play any game you want, that's one step. And then the other step that I talked about before is don't pay your taxes. I don't think in the next 2 or 3 weeks I'll have many people joining me in that lawsuit, but I'm not doing it this year because I don't have access to information, and there was a law passed that we could have access to it, and the government's blocking up the truth on the assassination, so I'm just not going to pay my taxes this year. I mentioned that at the meeting the other night, and quite a few people applauded, and they could understand very well what I was saying. As a solution, and you can think about it next year.
I guess we'll find out more about that on the shows we do after April 17th or so.
What happens to me. Okay, let's go into a memo now, because the story today in the news is the memo for the ITT hearings and Jack Anderson. And so I thought I'd bring into the program my own memo.
Well, it's not really your memo. It's a copy of
it's in my possession.
It's in your possession.
Yeah. Now, during
this is something, when we go into this, excuse me for interrupting, I want to see if we can
clarify
things. And explain the names of the people on this memo, where it came from, what it is, because it's a little hard.
Okay.
We can see it here in the studio, but of course the people that are listening at home now can't.
Okay, when you do research on the political assassination, the researchers have a standardized code which is used in all publications for references. And WR means we took it from the Warren Report. That's a WR. And the commission hearings refers to the 26 volumes that were published by the government printing office of the witness testimony before the Warren Commission. Those are the witness hearings, commission hearings. So if you have a memo, a document, and it says 1CH35, that means volume 1 of the commission hearings, page 35. Then there's commission exhibits, and that's CE, commission exhibits. And those were published, the first 15 volumes of the commission hearings, there's 26 volumes, are witness testimony. And the last 10 volumes, they're 1,000 pages each, are commission exhibits. Now, exhibits could come from the Secret Service. They are reports written up, Secret Service, State Department, FBI, CIA. And the commission exhibits are documents gathered by various agencies, the Dallas Police, law enforcement, New Orleans Police, whoever. They're all numbered to refer to as you do your research or want to look up information on the Warren Report. They have commission exhibit or the commission hearing number. Now, in the Warren commission report, they refer to the commission hearings as the source of their reference. But in addition to the exhibits, in Washington, D.C., in the library, the National Archives, are thousands and thousands of feet of microfilm of letters that the Warren Commission wrote to each other as they were writing their report. If they had any discrepancies or controversies or working memos, they probably kept them. You asked me before, why did they keep this stuff? I think they kept it to go over it while they were working in case there were any errors, in correcting each other. Like one man could say, well, I pointed this out, and they could go over these memos. So in addition to the commission exhibits, in Washington, D.C., in the National Archives, are thousands of working memos, letters of lawyers to the writers of the Warren Report, because first you had the staff investigating, then you had men writing the report up. So back and forth, you have letters. You have letters from Mr. Lee J. Rankin, the head attorney, to Earl Warren. You have letters from Mr. Warren, Chief Justice Warren, to J. Edgar Hoover, questions that need to be answered.
Okay, so what we have in front of us now is a commission exhibit.
It's a memo. It is not an exhibit. It's a letter. It's a copy of a letter of the working staff. I have 1,800 pages of these at my home.
Okay, so this is one of the pieces of paper that was circulated between members of the people writing the report and researchers.
Yes.
This is a photocopy of the microfilm.
Just like the question of the ITT memo, is Mrs. Baird writing to another party about a pending matter. Now, David Lifton, who's a very fine researcher, went to Washington. I've never been there. And he went into the National Archives and spent night and day, 2 or 3 weeks. And he took from microfilm various letters or memos that he thought pertained to my work, because this is a vast subject, and I don't cover all of that in my research in detail, although I'm knowledgeable, like the paper bag and different evidence against Oswald. I cover a lot on Lee and Marina Oswald as agents and various places they moved and their activities. So David copied from microfilm the working memos of the lawyers to each other, so, and sent me these copies, which I've been sifting through. So today I'm going to read you the first paragraph of a letter, and then we're going to analyze it for the remainder of the show. It was dated September the 22nd, 1964. Now, that date is important because the Warren Report was sold in October. It was printed. So this memo must have been one of the very last. They go up as late as September 24th, and that's the last printed because they go off to the printer. So September the 22nd, 1964, W. David Slauson, a writer or lawyer for the Warren Report, wrote to Howard Willens, another lawyer or writer, for the Warren Report, and the subject he calls is pending matters. Now, there's five subjects. He brings up seven, rather, in this letter, but we're going to talk about paragraph one on pending matters, and it has to do with Oswald's trip to Mexico. I'll read the subject, the paragraph he's written, through once, and then we'll analyze it sentence for sentence.
Okay, that's...
Okay, do you want to take a station break now?
No.
Okay, we'll go another minute.
We've got to about 10 minutes.
I see. It says, now this is the paragraph of David Slauson. Additional or substitute authority from the FBI, period. This is the way he starts it. Reference is made to footnote 563. You can write this down if you want in your Warren Report and look it up. 563, page 307 of chapter 6. The FBI was simply unable to get us in time a comprehensive list of the Hotel del Comercio guests who have been located in question. Consequently, in addition to the authority already cited, I have inserted a phantom commission exhibit number which can be filled in with something. I believe I have fudged the text sufficiently so that almost anything can be fitted in.
Now, we should say right here that this is not something you made up, this paragraph.
Nothing I had on this show have I ever... I've never made anything.
It sounds like, you know, somebody might have written this as a, you know, a way to damn the Warren Commission or the people who put it together. But this is actually, again, part of a memo between two members of the research staff and the people writing the Warren Commission report.
One way we could check it out is he's given his research commission exhibit number 3074, and we can look it up and see how much he fudged. Now, this is important. Now we're going to analyze these sentences, then we're going into the Mexican trip about Oswald. We've never done that on a show. He has substitute authority from the FBI.
What is substitute authority?
I have no idea how often it's used or what it means.
But it sounds like it's the authority to put something in the place of something else.
Because he uses the word phantom and he uses the word fudge and he says, I'll fill it in. So it isn't hard to interpret what substitute authority is. It means that when the Warren Report wants to replace fact with fiction, they have the permission of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It can't be anything else because he's written a phantom number and he's filled it in and he's fudged. That's what he went on to say. Now, he says he has substitute authority. So I want to ask you, to ask yourselves, what does substitute authority mean? And the most important thing is, how often did they use it in the Warren Report, and how often does the FBI ever use it? And what is substitute authority? I might add that I have sent a copy of this letter to Jack Anderson, and I thought I should share it with KLRB. He may do nothing with it, but I think we should analyze it and play around with it here ourselves. The second sentence is about the list at the Hotel del Comercio. The FBI did not give the Warren Commission, as of September 22nd, they're going to the printers 2 days later, the list of people that stayed at the hotel with Oswald in Mexico City.
Now he says the FBI was unable to get the list to us.
Well, they're not holding up the Warren Report till they get it. The FBI has not given it to them. There's no reason why they should go to print if they don't have the list. You see, the FBI was unable. We'd have to find out why they were unable or why they allow them to substitute something. This is, if they gave them the permission to substitute, that's a good way to be unable to get the list. Now he says, in addition to the authority already cited above.
Substitute authority.
Yeah, he refers to it again. In addition to the authority already cited, I inserted a phantom CE number. Well, I look up my Random House, because I'm not sure what I'm reading, the Random House Dictionary, the big one, and phantom is defined as an image appearing in a dream or formed in a mind. or apparition or specter, a thing or person that is little more than appearance, or an appearance without material substance. He says then he goes on to say, I fudge the text sufficiently. Fudge is to avoid coming to grips with a subject, to evade, to dodge, to cheat, or to welch. And then he says, almost anything can be fitted in.
Now, what was fitted in?
Well, I'll tell you how the Warren Report wrote the sentence then that he's referring to. It's a particular sentence on the part about Mexico. Now, this whole section here is telling you the permission that this particular man had to write his story. And so I'm going into the research now of the Warren Report. On page 305 that he talks about, it's chapter 6, Oswald in Mexico City, this section proving there was no conspiracy. He talks about Oswald in Mexico City. At page 305, this is the way the Warren Report reads. Quote, investigation of other guests of the hotel who were there when Oswald was has failed to uncover anything creating suspicion. See, the investigation failed to uncover it because they had no list. The Warren Report is telling you there was nothing in that hotel that happened, but we see now they had no list, and there was a reason for the list to be held up. And there can be no investigation if there's no list. He says the investigation of the guests failed to uncover anything. There can't be an investigation if you don't have the guest list.
Is this the only reference to Oswald's trip to Mexico?
Well,
or to a visit to Mexico by Oswald?
Well, on chapter 6, they talk about Oswald in Mexico in the chronology of the Warren Report of his daily movements, but there's a chapter trying to prove that there was no conspiracy of Oswald involved with anyone else. So this is the section on conspiracy regarding Mexico City trip. In the same section, further up in the paragraph, the one he was writing and referring, it says in quotes, Warren Report, page 305, all known persons who Oswald may have met while in Mexico, including the guests of the hotel where he stayed, were interviewed. Well, how can the Warren Report say they were interviewed when they don't even have the list? They're going to print and they don't even have the list, and he says they were all interviewed. Now,
that again, May.
The Warren Report, page 305, says all known persons who Oswald may have met while in Mexico, including guests of the hotel where he stayed, were interviewed.
Okay, now, why don't you go back to that memo?
The memo says regarding the FBI was simply unable to get us in time a comprehensive list of the Hotel del Comercio guests.
Say a comprehensive list.
Yeah.
So they must have gotten them some type of list.
They could not get a comprehensive list of those who have been located and questioned. So we don't know if every person in the hotel was located or questioned.
Is there a list in the Warren Commission report of people who were in the hotel when Lee Harvey Oswald was in that Mexico City hotel?
Yeah, when the Warren report came out, they have no list of the people. When the commission hearings were published in December, they had a list of people at the hotel. And it does not indicate that they were interviewed at all because the Warren report was out. See, they're saying that it's very complicated, but it's very simple. They say no credible witness has been located who saw Oswald with any unidentified person while in Mexico City.
Okay, they say they haven't found a credible witness
who saw Oswald with any unidentified person.
And yet in all the papers, the working papers from the Warren Commission, there's no evidence that anyone was ever interviewed.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
On that note, let's take a break and identify the station. This is KLRB Carmel, Stereo 101.7, serving you 24 hours a day. And this is Dialogue Assassination.